Have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? The great thing about podcasts is that you don't have to be a professional to do it. Anybody can publish anything. But there are a lot of questions to ask when you first get started. I know I had a bunch. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all the other big places people like to listen? And how do I make money off my podcast? Because it truly is a labor of love. To answer every one of these questions, it's really simple, actually. Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. Even I can use it. And now Anchor can match you with great sponsors too, so you can get paid to podcast. I love Anchor because it's simple to use. I can record an episode or just a thought on my phone and upload it right then and there. They provide background music and also some sounds to really make your podcast pop. So if you've ever wanted to start a podcast and make money doing it, go to anchor.fm/start. To join me and the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor, that's anchor.fm/start. I can't wait to hear your podcast. Welcome to the Your Oxygen Mask First podcast. I'm Erin Young, and this is a space where we explore ways to help the helpers. Because you can't help anyone before you help yourself. So sit back, put your own oxygen mask on, and enjoy the ride. And thank you so much for joining us again. I'm very excited to have Stephanie Taylor on with us today. She is an amazing person because she deals with animals and mental health. What is better than that? Somebody who deals with amazing animals and is also help trying to get us a better mental health. And Stephanie has an amazing new book that is coming out in September. It's called Animals That Heal: The Role of Service Dogs and Emotional Support Animals in Mental Health Treatment. Thank you so much, Stephanie, for joining us. I'm very excited for you to be here.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to talk about how service animals are beneficial for mental health. But first, why don't you give us a little bit of information on you and your background?
Okay, so I am a licensed therapist. Right now I have my LCDCI. I work at a prison right now doing substance abuse counseling. I've also worked with veterans with PTSD doing equine therapy. I just graduated from my master's program in clinical mental health counseling, so I'm on track to also have my LPC intern license next. So I have been kind of on this journey for a while, and I'm finally starting to see the end results of it. So that's pretty exciting.
Yay. That's very exciting. So let's start off and talk about the difference between service animals and emotional support animals and your regular household pet.
I see emotional support animals as kind of a gray area between service dogs and a pet. So pets are great. There is a ton of literature out there that shows the health benefits, the social benefits, the benefits of child development even. And some people just need some extra help. Both service dogs and emotional support animals do require that the handler be disabled for their condition. For emotional support animals, it does have to be disabled by a mental health condition. The Fair Housing Act and the Air Carrier Access Act, which are the two laws that they are under, basically just define disability as limited in one or more major life functions. It's very vague, and so that's why you see a lot of all of the misinformation that is out there. And so they just provide therapeutic benefit to their handler by them just being there. And then service dogs take that one step further. They are highly trained animals. The Americans with Disability Act requires them to be either a dog or miniature horse. So you may see a lot of the people claiming that their snake or their other random animal is their service animal, and those are not covered under law.
No peacocks.
Those are covered technically under the Air Carriers Access Act, which covers flights and planes under emotional support animal. But I see that changing in the near future with all of the issues that's been happening. So with the service animals, they are task trained to help their handler. So they have been trained in specific actions that they take to help their handler's disability. And this can be the stereotypical guide dog that you see, but then they also help with invisible disabilities, which is what my book talks about a lot. So invisible disabilities aren't always mental health. Diabetes can be considered an invisible disability. But for my book, it's talking a lot on the psychiatric. So people that may have depression, bipolar, schizophrenia, and how these dogs help these people live more normal life. And I know normal can be subjective, but just having them live a more productive life than they would otherwise with their disability.
How does interacting with a service animal or an emotional support animal benefit a person's mental or physical health?
With the emotional support animals, a lot of it has to do with how the person interacts with them. So if someone has depression and they have a reason to get out of bed every day to go feed the animal, to take care of it, that helps their diagnoses because they're not just laying in bed for days, weeks at a time. Even in the most extreme cases, it helps someone have a will to live because they have something that is dependent on them. And that was actually something I found in the literature as well, as some of the books that I was reading on people that have benefited from it. And so with the emotional support animals, it's more of the, I guess, secondary effect that has on them, what it does to the person indirectly. And then with the service animals, it's more the direct effect. One of the things that I learned about that I found was really fascinating was with people with schizophrenia. So a lot of them may have hallucinations, either visual or auditory. And so these animals can help them see if it is actually a real something, like some stimulus, or if it is something from their mental disorder. So if someone walks into the room and the dog alerts to it, they know that that is someone real. But if the dog doesn't react to it, then they know that that is their hallucination. And so they're more able to live a life where they're not always questioning their reality. With these service animals, it's really the direct effect compared to the emotional support animals. So with depression is one, they can actually bring them their meds when it's time. And so if they forget, the dog will remind them. Or they can do deep pressure therapy, which has been shown in other things such as like weighted blankets, heavy lead jackets you do when you're at the dentist for the x-rays. Those have actually been shown to be really beneficial for people with autism. And so these dogs kind of do something similar where they notice that their handler is having some type of episode and they can help calm them down. They can help ground them and kind of bring them back to reality.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that you don't always realize are going to be helpful to the symptoms that you're having. And so it seems like, well, that dog is just cuddling with them. How is that actually a task? But the dog is responding to cues from the handler, either from their behavior, the situation. Sometimes they can detect increased heart rate. And so the dog responds to it. And the owner may not even realize that it's happening in the moment because they're so engrossed in whatever episode that they're having that the dog can help snap them out of it.
You being a trainer as well, do you want to talk about the paces that you guys put the dogs through before they can even be certified as one of these special animals?
Yeah, so for the service dog, it usually takes about 2 years to fully train them. So it helps when we get them from puppies because they don't have bad habits yet. The first thing that we always do is teach them basic commands, you know, commands people teach all of their dogs, sit, stay, down. One of the commands that I thought was really helpful was stand. And that's not something that we always think of with pets, but when you need a dog to stand on all four legs for vet exams, or if you have to go through security and they have to pat the dog down, it actually provides very beneficial. So, or if you just need to wash your dog and you don't want them squirreling around, teaching them to stand still is very helpful. And so once they know kind of these basic commands, they also have to be housebroken by this time. And then once they kind of get past that, then they can be considered a service dog in training. Depending on the state that you live in will depend on if you have public access. Because they're not fully service dogs, they are not covered by the Americans with Disabilities Act. So that has to go by state law. And sometimes the states allow owners to do this. Sometimes they require certified trainers, and sometimes they don't give any access. That can make things difficult if you're not allowed to go in non-pet friendly locations. Usually you can work around it. You can call stores if they don't serve food, because that would be following the Federal Drug Administration. They have rules that wouldn't allow it. And you can go to some stores, clothing stores, boutiques, and get permission to train there. And so once they start learning the basic skills, they move on to public access skills. So this is being okay with different stimulus, riding in buses, learning how to walk on different types of flooring. Some dogs can get very scared on tile because it's slippery for them. Mm-hmm. And then once they kind of have those public access skills, and sometimes during the same time, you start working on task training. And then these are the actual skills that are going to help that person with their disability. And that's usually set up ahead of time with a lot of brainstorming and figuring out what their triggers are, what symptoms cause them the most issues, and really trying to figure out how these dogs can have a positive impact on their life. And so with this, it usually takes about 2 years to get them fully trained and fully, I guess, bomb-proof, really, is what you need from them.
So I have to ask, how do you train a horse?
So I've never trained any of the miniature horses, but I know a couple people that have, and they said it's very similar to training a dog. And they even have them like housebroken. And I'm just really amazed because I've worked with horses and I'm like, I don't know how I would train this to a service animal level.
But that's fascinating that it's out there and people are thinking outside the box in terms of how to get other people help. And it's also good to know that there are some really good programs that you put the dogs through. It's not just slapping a vest on them and printing out a certificate from the internet, right?
Right. There's technically right now no certification or registration for service animals. There is a lot of sites online that claim that, oh, pay us $100 and you can take your pet anywhere. And there's always the little fine print at the bottom that kind of saves them from getting sued. But according to all the various laws, there's actually no certification process right now. And the main issue is that it would create undue burden on people with disabilities who a lot of them are on limited income or may not have access to a approved trainer if there was one. Mm-hmm. So there is a controversy regarding that, but right now there is no certification, and it harms other handlers when people show certification or show ID, because then those, we call them gatekeepers, people employed by the business that is deciding who can come in and who can't, they expect that from the next team. And if they don't want to pay that money to have something that they don't need, that can hurt them from living their lives as they want to.
Well, that's very good to know. Thank you for talking about that. Let's talk about some of the biggest successes that you've had with the programs you've been involved in.
Yeah, so one of the programs that I was working with was on a farm in Bulverde, Texas. And I was working with the veterans with PTSD. And with that program, it was technically a therapeutic program. It wasn't therapy, which the difference is kind of gray, but it was basically teaching them to work with the horses. And as a result, they will have a reduction in symptoms. And so we had one client that was working with one of their biggest horses, and he was terrified of horses at first. And so he was working there for a while. I can't remember how long exactly. But by the end of it, he was saddling him up. He was working with him in the round pen. So the horse was running free and he was just in the pen with him. And I remember talking to him later on, and he was saying how he was able to go to some event and he wasn't getting nervous. He was able to actually have a conversation with someone without always having to look around. Hmm. And he was able to actually wear some of his military gear or military affiliation gear without getting nervous about it. He kind of had the, not necessarily paranoia, but the
hypervigilance.
Yes, hypervigilance. And so he was able to start relaxing, because with the horses, they're called the 1,000-pound lie detector. So because they are prey animals, they're always looking to the human to determine if the situation is safe or not. And so if you're nervous, if you're feeling off that day, the horse is going to pick up on that and read into it. And so when you're working with the horse, you have to learn how to regulate your emotions. You have to be able to calm yourself down, be able to know when to kind of increase your energy to get the horse to move the way you want it to lower your energy when you want the horse to calm down. And so you gain a lot of awareness about your body language, about your emotions. And so it actually can help benefit people, help calm them down, because they're getting more in touch with their emotions. So I think that's kind of been one of the biggest ones that I've seen working with the horses. And then working with the dogs, some of the things that I've seen are, I've taken my dog Jaeger to places and people just kind of gravitate towards him. Even if we're not doing, you know, formal therapy, if we're working kind of on a, I guess, like community therapy event, people kind of like, oh, there's a dog, and they slow down, they stop, they actually take some time out of their busy schedule to just pet the dog. And you don't see that a lot of times. People are always rushing to their next event. They're, you know, focusing on their 10 million list to do, and they don't ever really stop to kind of smell the roses. And so that's one thing that I've noticed a lot, even just taking him around places. People are like, oh, okay, you know, I'm going to take 5 minutes out of my busy schedule and just relax for a minute.
Well, that's incredible. So let's talk about some of the challenges that you've had to overcome.
So with my own personal journey, I'm originally from Indiana. And when I met my now husband, he was my boyfriend at the time, I decided to move down to Texas. And I had a lot of unrealistic expectation. I figured I would move down to Texas and everything would change and all this kind of stuff. And so when things didn't change automatically, then I started having a lot of anxiety. I was having panic attacks. I was having a hard time going new places. Like, I would drive there and then not be able to go in because I was crying and just freaking out. And so that was kind of when I realized I needed to go to therapy myself. And I had gone when I was a little kid, but I hadn't been actually in a while. And so I was able to kind of work on myself and work on what it was that I was struggling with. And this was about the time that I was starting my own, my master's program. So I was kind of the clinician and the patient at the same time, which was actually really fascinating to see what I was learning in class and seeing how it actually applied to me and being able to practice it myself. And so one of the biggest things that helped me through that time was my dogs. And with Jaeger, I was training him to be a service dog. And I was able to start going places. I stopped having panic attacks. I was able to move in our society without freaking out, basically. And so when I was starting my program, I realized that the people in my program that were going to be licensed and able to write these letters for these animals had no idea what the requirements were, what the differences between them were, or really anything. And so I really had to inform people about my own service dog. I had to inform people about what they could do for their own clients. I was actually did quite a bit of consulting with my peers who were seeing clients and whether or not a service dog or an emotional support animal would be beneficial. That's kind of what led me to writing this book, because I really wanted to help other clinicians understand what it was that they were basically prescribing. And at the same time, I wanted to help clients who would benefit from these animals, yet be overwhelmed and confused by all of these misinformation that was on the internet. And so that's kind of where my book came from and how that kind of stems from my own struggles.
Well, huge virtual high five for you for taking the time and identifying that you as a helper needed to help yourself first before you could move forward in your journey. So I'm very proud of that. Thank you.
Yeah, I think all therapists should go to therapy at one point or not, because if we're not willing to do it, how can we expect clients to go through it?
Absolutely. Is there anything else about your book that you want to talk about maybe more in depth?
Yeah, so the book is really a guide. It helps people from understanding what the animals are, what the history of them is, how to talk with a therapist, especially if they don't know much about it, and then also going along the training aspect of it, finding a dog, and the laws that I mentioned, because a lot of them are misconstrued online, or they're twisted, or they're not even talked about. So really giving them a basis for you know, here's what the law says, here is, you know, kind of what it means, so that if they have any issues, they can point to the law and say, you know, this is what it actually says, and this is why it needs to be this way. And then I also talk a little bit about common problems they may face and how they might be able to handle those situations. Because we talk a lot about the benefits of having a service dog, but we don't talk about the problems that it can also create, especially with someone with anxiety. If they have social anxiety, having a dog can bring a lot more attention to themselves than they would like. And so being able to understand all of the different aspects that come along with being a handler is going to help them make a better informed decision, because it's not the right intervention for everybody.
Yeah, I didn't even think about the added attention and how it would affect people.
Yeah, that happens all of the time. People will put patches on their dog that say don't pet, and people will just come up and start petting them. People will make kissy noises, do a lot of baby talk, and just try to distract the dog, which can be very detrimental to the handler, especially if the dog needs to have full attention on the handler to make sure that they get all the alerts and cues that they need, especially if it's a medical alert dog and they need to be aware of blood sugar, be aware of any heart issues, because it could send a handler to the hospital if their dog misses an alert.
Mm-hmm. So those patches are there for a reason.
Yes. And sometimes handlers will allow people to pet. Usually for me, if it's the end of the day and we're done, I'll let people pet him because I don't really need his attention on me that much longer. But if it's the beginning of the day, you know, I try to just stay away from that. But some handlers will say yes, some will say no. But definitely ask if before you pet.
Absolutely. And where can we find your book?
It's on Amazon right now. It's available for pre-order. And September 1st, it will be available. It'll be released. Right now, I think I just have the Kindle one up, but I'm working on getting the paperback up. There's apparently some formatting issues that I was not aware of that I have to fix.
Oh, no.
Yeah, well, thankfully it's just a Word document, so it's pretty easy to fix.
So, random question that I just thought of. What do you know now about writing a book that you wish you would have known when you started?
I think it is pacing yourself. You know, I was talking earlier about how I had unrealistic expectations when I moved to Texas, and I had a bit of unrealistic expectations when I started the book. I was like, I am going to write a 100,000 word book, and it's going to be like Harry Potter sized. And then once I kind of got everything out, I was like, well, this isn't as long as I expected. And for me, it was really the get what you need out on the book. And if it doesn't exactly meet expectations of it's not long enough, or it's not exactly what I had planned at the beginning, that can be okay. Being able to go with the flow and get the information out that you want to, not the ones that you think is expected of you.
Very nice. I love that answer. Do you have any closing thoughts or anything else you want to talk about?
If you are interested in a service dog or emotional support animals, do your research, talk to your mental health professional or your doctor, and if they tell you no, don't let that be a hard no. A lot of times, they just don't understand, and when you show them actual research, and that's part of why I wrote the book, because I didn't want people to be left high and dry. I wanted them to be saying, well, here's a book written by a mental health professional. Maybe you'll listen to her if you won't listen to me. So I think just kind of sticking to your guns and doing what you feel is best for your treatment and not just taking a no at the start.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Stephanie, for joining me. if you're interested in checking out her Kindle book right now, you can go to Amazon and check it out. I'll have a link in the episode page as well as the resources. And then if you want to learn more about Stephanie and what she's doing, I'll also have links to her website as well. Thank you so much, Stephanie.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen today. And I hope that you found something that really resonates with you. I can't wait to share even more. So please subscribe to the podcast, and you can find links to our resources in the description and at youroxygenmaskfirst.com.